A lot of people's never had mead, let alone heard of it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's always a pleasure when they come up. You see they're a little timid about it. It's like, what am I getting into? And they take that first sip and it's like, oh my goodness. Like, yeah, we know.
Yeah. If the gods were drinking it, it had to be good, right? Yeah.
Ah, mead. Whether in a glass or a flagon, this adult beverage is the life-giving potion which can boost our charisma and strength, when enjoyed in moderation, of course. Mead is made from fermented honey, and where there are bees, there's a buzz.
I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand.
I'm David Zelsky, and this is the Fork in the Road podcast presented by Georgia Grown and the fine folks at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Each episode, we feature stories from Georgia's farmers, fishermen, merchants, artisans, chefs, and others who help provide Georgia-grown products to folks in the Peach State and beyond. Today, we are in Dahlonega. From Atlanta, head north on Georgia 400 until it ends, and take a left. Dahlonega is a city known for its beautiful scenery as much as its historical significance. It's time for a short history lesson. Dahlonega was the site of the second significant American gold rush in 1828. There are many theories as to when, how, and where that first gold nugget was discovered in Georgia, but one thing is for certain, it sparked a national sensation. Estimates say between 10 and 25,000 miners flocked to Georgia in the late 1820s and early 1830s in search of their golden ticket to wealth and prosperity. It's with that history in mind that today we visit Etowah Meadery and Dahlonega Brewery. Located just 2 miles from Dahlonega's bustling town square, this farm winery slash craft brewery specializes in some of the finest spirits North Georgia has to offer. And it's a hot spot for locals and tourists alike. On a beautiful afternoon, I visited with the founder of Etowah Meadery.
My name is Blair Housley. That's B-L-A-I-R. Last name is H-O-U-S-L-E-Y. And the company is Etowah Meadery and Dahlonega Brewery. I'm the principal owner, founder, chief executive officer, floor sweeper, whatever you want to call it. I do it all.
Blair has made it a point to keep a strong connection to both the area's original people, the Cherokee, and his own personal heritage.
Tell me about the beginnings of Etowah Meadery.
So the Etowah comes from the river that starts in Dahlonega, Georgia. It comes out of the Hightower area. It used to be called Hightown from the Cherokees. And Etowah is actually a Muscogee word, which means a place. And so the Cherokee, when they moved into this area, after the Mississippian people moved out in the Muscogees, the Etowah River, which starts in Dahlonega, runs about 164 miles. And so growing up here in Dahlonega, it was a place of the Cherokee Nation. They had encampments here prior to the Trail of Tears. And so my wife, Cherokee family as well, was part of that Trail of Tears movement. Part of her family moved out to Oklahoma and part of them stayed behind and actually some of them moved back. On my side, I was part of that movement as well, but not as prominent as my wife because they actually had property along that while we were just scattered in the general area. But in, growing up in high school, I would go out to the Etowah. We would go fishing, hang out with our guys, do swimming. So it was always a nice place to go to and just hang out and a beautiful place to be around. So when I decided to start brewing beer initially and making mead, I was trying to come up with what should I call this place. And it always came back to me, well, it was kind of a family thing about being Etowah, and Etowah means a place. And so maybe it's the place that we sort of want to have where we can create things. And so that's where the term Etowah comes. So we have Etowah Meadery. Eventually we'll have some other new products like Etowah Spirits and a few other things like that that we'll eventually expand on. But currently, as of today, we're the first and only craft brewery and farm winery in the state of Georgia. Yeah, so Dahlonega Brewery, we had used the name for a while, Etowah Brewery as well, and we still have that kind of reserve to create sort of a unique thing, Etowah Meadery, Etowah Brewery, Etowah Spirits. But I wanted to give something back to the community of Dahlonega that I grew up here along with my wife, so we're using the term or the name Etowah Brewing.
And the drink du jour? Mead. What is mead, you ask? Well, here's a hint. Some people call it honey wine. It is a beverage made by fermenting honey with water using yeast. It's often flavored with fruits, spices, herbs, or hops. You may not have had the pleasure of trying mead before, but it's been around for longer than you think.
Why mead? Mead's been around forever.
It's a unique product. It's actually the oldest alcoholic beverage in the world. So when people talk about an ancient beverage, that's actually what they're talking about.
Oldest alcoholic beverage in the world.
The cultivation of grapes and of grain as well didn't come around until later. Grapes were more economical than trying to hunt for beehives, if you will, and trying to find the honey. And I always tell people that, well, you didn't have to get stung either when you're trying to do grapes. So that's how grapes became more popular, if you will, than the honey and the honey wine. What they used to call it is the nectar of the gods.
Mead is certainly up there in terms of long-lasting historical pedigree, and it might even be responsible for the origin of a common phrase.
Some people say that as far as the term honeymoon comes from, that is the ancient offering of when a couple would get married, their friends and family would give them a full moon's worth of honey mead to help consummate the marriage. So that's where the term honeymoon actually comes from.
You learn something new every day, right? Blair's background with beer brewing is what led him to become a purveyor of this ancient beverage.
But I started out making beer first, then wine, and then mead as well along the way. But in Georgia, it was easier for me to start in a farm winery, since up here in Dahlonega, the farm wineries are very popular. And then eventually, a few years later, bring in the brewery aspect of it.
Though they started off just offering mead, due to customer demand, Blair and his team eventually expanded to include a stunning lineup of lovingly crafted beers.
We had to upgrade all of our equipment because when we first started, we thought, well, we'll just get a small system because we're already established with the mead, the honey wine, and we'll just offer a few beers to our wine customers as an add-on. But we started selling more beer than we could actually keep up with, and our distributors wanted more and more products. So we decided, okay, let's upgrade. And so this was sort of in the middle of COVID, actually. So we actually had to shut down during COVID just to move old equipment out and put new equipment in. And some of this equipment's just now got here in the last couple of weeks. So we've only brewed a handful of batches with this brand new system and how to do things. So I'm very excited about, you know, all this new equipment that we're actually able to offer some of these new products to our local people here.
You have this tasting room also. It's got to be a great place for
yes.
locals to be, but also visitors coming into Dahlonega.
Yes, we have a pretty nice tasting room. Inside we can seat about 112 people. Outside probably about another 100 as well. People just come to love here. They'll rent the place out for wedding receptions, birthdays, chamber of commerce events, so you name it. A lot of people love to come here because it's a very unique place with our current offerings of both mead and beer. We're the only local meadery around in this North Georgia area, so we're very unique in that way.
And yes, we'll be taking a visit to the tasting room a little later.
And we usually, on the weekends, we try to have music going on. Sometimes we'll have food trucks up here. So it's just a good place to come and visit and hang out.
Etowah Meadery patrons can spend a whole day here, enjoying an enticing array of meads and beers while savoring that cool mountain breeze from the North Georgia hills. And get this, most of the ingredients used by Etowah Meadery and Dahlonega Brewery come from right here in the state of Georgia.
You like to incorporate a lot of Dahlonega grown, Georgia grown products into your mead and your beer, I believe.
Yes.
Tell me about how you incorporate and who you work with.
So we have our own farm where we grow some of our products, not necessarily the grain. We get that from a Georgia grain mill. So we do have some of the malt that comes from Georgia. We experiment with the fruit. I have fig bushes. I have pawpaw trees, which is very unique fruit in North Georgia. And some of the honey that we actually use comes off our farm. But we also buy products from other local fruit people, especially honey, because on average right now we're going through about 1,500 pounds of honey a month. So there's no way that I could have that many hives unless I had about 1,000 hives. And that would be a job in itself. So we keep a handful of hives that we pull our specialty honey off of and we offer it here, which we're doing extraction in a couple of days. And then so we have different fruits, we have different honeys, and we have different grains. So even some of our beers have some of our local honey that we brew with and have one in there. We just got through doing one that was called a Honey Helles, and it was a German-style honey beer. So we actually took some of our local honey and had it on tap, and it was gone in a couple of days. Just people just loved it.
Even most of the honey used for the mead is Georgia-grown.
The mead is primarily all Georgia honey. We do use some other honey that comes maybe out of Florida, like orange blossom. Some Tupelo comes down in that area, gallberry honey, South Georgia. But we've experimented with other honeys that's not necessarily prevalent in this area, like a blueberry honey or a blackberry honey. I've even got some honey from Hawaii that we wanted to play around with, tangerine honey and things like that, that we like to have a little uniqueness. But most everything comes from, as far as the honey, comes from Georgia. As a farm winery in Georgia, we're required by law to have a minimum of 40% of all of our products come from Georgia. So we're very supportive of all that Georgia culture, especially growing everything in Georgia to make it very unique product for North Georgia.
It's kind of like Blair's personal laboratory where he can experiment with and develop exciting new flavor combinations.
Yes, we do. We've made a couple of unique products. One we made with Red Oak Lavender Farm. That's on the east side of Dahlonega. We used some of their buds to make a product for them. And then they bought it all because they loved it so much. And then we made a second batch just about 6 months ago. It's a lavender mead that we made actually for as a contract for a distributor that wanted to put it out there in the market. So it's a very unique lavender style mead. A lot of people don't think lavender, but it's not like eating soap or anything. It's actually just a nice floral hint on the lavender, and you can just barely taste it, because if you put too much lavender in a drink mix like that, you're going to get a minty kind of flavor. So we made sure we just used organic buds and just only had it actually in there for just a little bit, so you only get mostly that floral.
Gotta be fun for you, your wife, and your team to come up with new flavors and to get creative, because you're not just beer. Your mead, your everything.
We've even worked with cider places to make some unique apple products, some pear products. So we call ourselves, you know, a unique place. We're a creation fermentation place, and we're not just making beer, we're not just making wine. We try to make several different things. So that's what some of the things we're trying to project, if you will, to our local people and to everybody in North Georgia that comes up here, is like, you know, you're not just coming to a typical brewery or a typical winery. We got a little bit of everything here, and we're always experimenting with new flavors and new fruits and the way of mixing different stuff. So even we've had some coffee meads before, we've used coffee. So it's just, we just love experimenting with different flavor profiles.
Now that we've gotten a good rundown of everything Etowah Meadery / Dahlonega Brewery has to offer, it's time to get a look at the brewing process. Let's start with the beer.
So in the brewing process, when you're making a typical beer, starts with a barley grain, and that grain is roasted. And so it depends on if you're making a light beer versus, say, a dark beer like a stout. That just depends on how long that barley is roasted. So if it's just roasted real lightly, it's going to make a nice pale ale or a light beer. If you roast it a little bit longer, you get some more dark flavors. Different other roasting temperatures will get you chocolate flavors. So depending on the style of beer that you're trying to make and the color that you're trying to make, you just use that different barley. Now there's other things called adjuncts that we actually can put in it, like oatmeal, wheat, rye, so we can add other things in there to actually make a different style of beer. And of course we use a couple of different types of yeast here. Primarily we've been using a Norwegian Kveik style yeast, which means it ferments at a little bit higher temperature, but it's nice and clean, and we can ferment quicker, usually 3 days compared to a couple of weeks.
Just like with all the great craft beers, the quality control starts by picking the finest grains.
So for the brewing part that we do here, we get typical like any other brewery, small craft, we get a lot of stuff in sacks. Most of them are 50 or 55 pound. We get, depends on the flavor profile, different types of grain. A lot of them are all over the world. We also get some from Georgia malt that we like to put in most of our beers. It's a very good malt.
And once the grain has been selected?
Take it, we put it into this grain mill here. We just dump it in. And it grinds up the grain and breaks it up. So it's got little rollers in there. So it just basically separates the hulls a little bit so we can get into those starches. We do have a larger grain mill. We just, since we're still new with this, we still haven't had time to install that yet. But we got that outside and we'll eventually pipe it inside here. So for the honey part, in a couple days, we'll use this honey extractor. So basically you take frames and you sit your frames in down there. So this one has a motor on it, you plug it in, and what it does, it spins. And what that spinning motion does, that centrifugal force, separates the honey out of the comb, and then it just comes out of the thing here, and we put it into a bucket, and then we have a bucket full of honey. Typical bucket full of honey, 5 gallons, weighs about 60 pounds. Once we have on the beer side, once we have everything ground up, we bring it over here to the mash tun. And this is where we just are in the middle of the process of wrapping up part of a beer today. And so we'll open this up. So once we've got the grain in here, we'll let it sit on hot water for about an hour. And what that conversion does, it takes those starches and converts it into a sugar that we want, which goes into that kettle over there and becomes a boil kettle. So this is all the packed in grain that we have. So this is basically just grain that we ground up. It's been sitting in here. It's moist because we've got most of the water out, but it's been sitting for about an hour and a half now. And what that does, that conversion went from starches to sugar. We did a wash through to get the water and put it into the boil kettle. And now what this becomes is, to us, is almost like a waste byproduct.
After the brewing process, you're left with a whole lot of wet, ground-up grain. But not to worry, y'all. All of that waste product doesn't just go to waste.
But luckily, we have Mr. Andrew Sons here of Red Oak Farms, cattle farm. And so he takes this grain and actually feeds it to his cows. And if we're lucky enough, when the cow gets big and fat, we're going to have some steak.
That, my friends, is the circle of life for farming.
You know, starts out somewhere as a grain. We get a good process out for a Georgia beer, and Mr. Sullins here gets to feed his cows.
The beer making process is fascinating, but this beer would go nowhere without something to hold it in. That's where these cans come into play.
It'll fill up two cans at a time. So you basically put the cans up, trigger a switch, and it'll fill it up to whatever number of seconds, about 12 ounces. It'll go into this little device. We press the safety switch and it seals it with the lid on it.
And if you prefer bottles.
On our bottling line, we fill this as basically a gravity fed. So it's a trough system in here that'll hold several gallons. And so based on the size of the bottle, we can either put a 750 milliliter bottle, or we can put like the short whiskey style bottles by adjusting this tray up or down. And what that does is it'll fill it to the proper height. It'll then go up after it's done filling. We just take it off. It'll close itself off. And then we have a little machine over here that we put corks in, and it'll actually press a button and it corks them.
Very nice.
We do have a label applicator we bring out when we need to. And then we actually put our labels depending on the style and the flavor it's in there.
Now it's time to talk about the mead. Like I mentioned before, this drink is made from fermenting honey with water and other ingredients. I got to see a machine called a honey extractor, which is used to get every drop of delicious honey out of the frames so it can go into the mead.
So for the honey part, in a couple of days we'll use this honey extractor. So basically you take frames and you sit your frames in down there. So this one has a motor on it, you plug it in, and what it does, it spins. And what that spinning motion does, that centrifugal force separates the honey out of the comb, and then it just comes out of the thing here, and we put it into a bucket, and then we have a bucket full of honey. Typical bucket full of honey, 5 gallons, weighs about 60 pounds.
Seeing and smelling all this beautiful beer and mead has made me quite thirsty. And it's kind of my job to tell you all about these products, right? Even if it requires some self-sacrifice. So, that being said, I guess it's time to head on over to the tasting room.
All right, Blair, the moment we've been waiting
for. Yes.
It was so cool walking through there, seeing everything, seeing how the process works. And it makes it so much more rewarding when you're drinking and trying it. When you're at the place where it happens.
Right.
When you're in the hills where the product comes
from. Yeah. A lot of people are surprised. It's like, you make all this here? It's like, yeah, it's made just right there in our fermentation area. A lot of people are very surprised about that. I guess they're used to going in. Of course, when you go to a lot of bars or restaurants, none of the alcohol at least is made there. So it's kind of unique. Even if you go into some local breweries or wineries, especially brew pubs, it's always from somewhere else. So we always tell people, it's like, no, we want to make everything here because that's the way we can control quality. And we get to try different flavors.
I love it. I've had beer a lot. And I'm excited about trying yours because it sounds like there's some really unique flavors. I kind of want to start with the mead.
You bet.
I want a fresh palate going into this because I have not tried it as much. And I see bees everywhere. I was at Red Oak.
Yep.
I was at Red Oak. I saw the bees sucking on the lavender, pollinating the lavender.
Yep, making good lavender honey. Yep.
And now it comes here. So I think it's really neat. All right, so where do we start?
So we're going to start with number 19, which is the one that's closest to you. And the four that you're going to try here is considered on the traditional line, which means that it's It's a medium in alcohol, like 12%. Okay. That's actually medium.
Okay.
For mead.
Yeah.
And it's made without carbonation. So in other words, it's not a sparkling mead or sparkling wine. So number 19 is made strictly with Georgia wildflower honey. There's no spices, no fruit. It's not barrel aged. It's just simply traditional mead.
And the temperature is chilled.
I like to serve it a little chilled, sort of like with a white wine. You would normally serve a little chilled.
Okay.
But we even serve, we got a couple of wines here. We just like everything a little bit chilled. We're up here in North Georgia. We like to be a little bit different. So even if it's red wine, we're going to give it to you chilled just because we're kind of cool like that.
I love it. It's the consistency.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smooth, almost creamy in a way. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. And so some of the hints you'll get may be a little peppery.
Okay.
That depends on where the wildflower is actually, the honey's come from. Like if you think about the wildflowers in North Georgia versus just the wildflowers in South Georgia, it's going to be different flowers, different trees that the bees pull from. So you can have different flavor notes from the different flowers or trees in two different regions. So you can have everything from a nice smooth to a peppery. Even like clover honey has a little cinnamon flavors to it.
Yeah.
It just depends on where the honey comes from. There's over 300 varieties of honey. We use about 5 or 6 here on a regular basis. Correct. Now, this one's definitely unique. It is made with blueberry honey, the blossom, and blueberries. So we get a little floral hints, and it smells sort of like a blueberry bush when it's blooming. That's coming from the blueberry honey aspect of it. And then you'll get a little bit of that blueberry flavor. And actually, this varies year to year, just like any natural agricultural product does. You have little variations in that. And it depends on how good the season for the blueberries were.
This is such a perfect summer drink.
Mm.
Or really right when it's becoming springtime, too.
Yes.
I love that flavor. It's refreshing. And it's different. It hits you differently than 19 did. All right. I like the blueberry. I'm a fan.
Yep. All right. So the next one is called Stone Pile Peach. So it's named after Stone Pile Gap, just right up the road here. Mm-hmm. It's made with fresh Georgia peaches.
Okay.
So we got these peaches last year. They're July princesses we get from Dickey Farms. We put over 700 pounds of peaches in that batch. Next year we'll have to make a little more because we're almost out already. It'll be about 1,000 pounds of local Georgia peaches that goes into making.
Oh, there's that peach.
Yeah
that one. That's very obvious. I think in a blind test, I would know exactly what that is.
Yep. And the honey base in that is just typical wildflower honey.
Well, honey and peaches are natural.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, honey and blueberries are.
And we try not to make it too sweet, too cloyingly sweet, we try to make everything semi-sweet. I'm a dry red fan myself. I like Malbecs and things like that, but I found out that what people buy versus what my flavor is a little different. Most people buy this sort of semi-sweet, because when you bite into a peach or even a blueberry, they expect a little sweetness, because that's what they're used to in jams and stuff they get from the store.
It is sweet, but it's not like candy.
Correct. Yeah, you know, it's not cloyingly sweet.
Yeah.
It's just a little semi-sweet thing that we do.
Three tastings in, and I've already had lavender, blueberry, and peach. Yeah, I think I'm starting to like this place. But there's plenty more mead to try. And for this one, we take a little trip south of the border.
So 22 is going to be a little bit different. That's the only one we haven't submitted for an award yet. We just have bottled that. We released that one on Cinco de Mayo. So that is the base of it is wildflower honey, limes and lemons, and then an orange blossom honey finish on the back. So it's like a margarita style mead. We call it an imperial meadarita. This one's called Sorta Cortez because we took it and we aged it in tequila barrels.
I saw that over here. Bring
yes,
it to the bottle.
The Sword of Cortez.
I love that little bottle.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Cheers. Sword of Cortez. Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. The tequila. It's that tequila flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't hit you like a shot of tequila.
Right. Now, we did have one before that we had. It was called Dahlonega Sunset.
Okay.
And you think of like a tequila sunset or a tequila sunrise. And so we made it in with that with cherries. And it had a little bit more. We left it in the barrel for over a year. We picked up more of that tequila flavor for that one. But this one, we just wanted light hints of.
That's my favorite.
Yeah,
I like them all. That's cool because I haven't had anything like that. Like if I just had that much tequila, it'd be a different story, right?
It'd be a different show then.
We're well into our mead tasting experience at this point, so it's time to add a little sparkle.
So these are all, on this flight, is all sparkling meads.
Okay.
They're lighter in alcohol. They'll range anywhere from, say, 5% to 6.5% versus, say, the 12s over here.
Okay.
So it's a half the alcohol, but a sparkling. So you think about a summer kind of drink, very light and refreshing. That's what this whole series is going to be. So your first one up is number 18. That's called RB&B. That has a raspberry, blueberry, and blackberry fruit in it. It's our number one seller, and we won an international award for that.
All right. Oh yeah, a little sparkle.
Yeah, just
that's
enough.
That's one for the pool or the beach.
Yep.
Hanging out all day, staying out of trouble.
Trying to stay out of trouble.
Oh, what a different feeling with the sparkle,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the.
Yeah, they're super popular.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
We can't hardly keep that one in stock.
After trying an amazing sparkling version of the margarita-style mead I tried earlier, it's time for some dessert.
12 is Granny's apple pie. What do you think it's going to taste like?
I'm guessing kind of a North Georgia apple made by Granny with a lot of sweetness.
Maybe not too sweet, but it has got pie in the name, so it is going to be a little on the sweeter side, but all those spices is what brings it to life.
That is apple pie.
Yeah.
Straight apple pie. That's almost a dessert wine also.
Yes.
Have that after the meal, and then you don't need to pump 500 calories.
And we sell a pretty good bit of that, actually. And we sell to other wineries as well, and we actually sell that one to Mercier Orchards because they like it in the cans and they like it on the keg.
Side note here, listen back a few episodes to hear my visit to Mercier Orchard, a beautiful apple farm in Blue Ridge, Georgia. For now, let's get back to the tasting. For dessert lovers, Etowah Meadery has a huge variety of options.
One of them on the beer side is called Happy Camper. It's a s'mores beer, actually. We get local chocolate, you know, from chocolatiers. We take the marshmallows, we actually toast them, and it's made based on a brown ale. And it's called Happy Camper. It's a s'mores beer. The other one is we take some of our figs off our farm, and we make like a fig mead, but then we barrel age it in bourbon barrels with spices, and we call that one Figgy Pudding.
Bring me some Figgy,
figgy pudding.
Don't worry, y'all. I'm not driving.
All right, 16.
16 is something that one of our customers named. I used to make just a mango mead, and I made a guava mead because I like both of those tropical fruits. And so I mixed them both together one day and put it on tap. And the first customer that came up, we didn't even have a name for it, I said, "What do you think about it?" And she says, "OMG, this is so good." So we named it OMG Mango Guava.
See, when you get to name things yourself, it's a lot more fun, right?
Yeah.
OMG. Yes.
Yeah.
I got it. They're all so different. That's really neat. Sometimes I do tastings and I'm like, they're good, but you got to search for that difference here. This one is distinct. From apple pie to tequila.
Right.
To this, it's quite a difference.
A lot of people's never had mead, let alone heard of it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's always a pleasure when they come up, you see they're a little timid about it. It's like, what am I getting into? And they take that first sip and it's like, oh my goodness, like, yeah, we know.
Yeah. If the gods were drinking it, it had to be good, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's official. I'm a mead head. I just love this stuff. Seems like those folks in ancient China were really on to something 40,000 years ago, but now it's time to sample a more modern beverage as we finally move over to the beer side of the table. Like I said, I'm not driving.
So number one is our standard IPA. It's our flagship, if you will. We haven't won any commercial awards on our beers yet since we've only been doing it for a short time. But homebrewing, when I was homebrewing beer and entering contests, I'd won about 16 medals with my beer.
So this
is one of the top sellers. So it's called Little Buzzard. It's got two things that brings it. It's a little buzzard mountain, and it also got a little honey in it. So it'll get you a little buzz. So Little Buzzard.
Little Buzzard. Okay. Now, is this a single IPA? Is it double imperial?
This is a single IPA.
Okay. Yeah. IPA is my thing.
There you go.
All right. Let's see.
Ooh.
I like it.
It's a little different. That little, not necessarily a full honey taste like you would think with the meads, but just enough in there to change it.
That's fantastic.
So I've been a big fan of IPAs for a while. I mean, that's been the fad and stuff. And I'm just not a big bitter fan. I don't like bitter IPAs, but I do like floral and nice tasting IPAs.
Yeah, that's
and that's what I've
is.
Tried to structure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So number two is our Imperial IPA, a double IPA, if you will.
All right.
It's called Instant Retirement. My wife came up with that name because when she tried it and it's 10% alcohol, she said, you'll be one and done, you're instantly retired. So we called it Instant Retirement.
You don't buy the keg of this one, right? there we go.
You gotta leave that up to the professionals.
Okay. Instant Retirement, ready? I got 20 years till retirement.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm good. You know what? I can tell it's stronger, but it's not nailing you with the alcohol.
Yeah, you're not regretting it.
Yeah, you're not regretting it. Unless you do that keg of it, I was talking about. Yeah, that's really good. I like that one a lot.
So that's one of my most award-winning beers. As a home brewer, won gold and best in shows with that one.
Yeah, they have similarities, but this one definitely has a lot more oomph to it.
Yep.
But it's fun. They're both great.
Now that we've tried the craft beer enthusiast's favorite, the IPAs, our next stop on this epic tasting flight is a lighter destination.
A little bit on the lighter side, number seven is called Psycho Blonde. So it's a blonde ale, obviously.
Okay.
The Psycho comes from my sister-in-law. She's a blonde and she's a little crazy, but love her to death.
Right.
So we named it after her, Psycho Blonde.
Very fun. Okay. It's lighter. It's good.
Yep. A little hoppier for a blonde, but not overly hoppy like an IPA would be.
All right.
And our last one's a little dark beer. Got to throw one in there for that. It's finale. Called Boggs Creek, named after Boggs Creek right up the road. It's an oatmeal stout.
Okay.
Yep.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is for maybe the people who like Guinness.
Yes.
And want to try something a little different.
Smooth. Yeah.
Smoother than a Guinness.
Yep.
Oh, that's great. That's so much fun. I love that we have the beer option, the meat option, and I like all the different local flavors that are in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Blair, thank you so much.
You bet.
That was a blast. Thanks for showing me around. And
glad you came
I'll
in.
I'll be seeing you again soon.
Yeah.
Keep those awards coming.
Oh, yes.
I think you will with this. All right.
And thus concludes our monumental tasting of all that Etowah Meadery and Dahlonega Brewery has to offer. It was quite a journey, with many different fruits, flowers, hops, honeys, and boisterous blondes along the way. And now I finally know why they call mead the nectar of the gods, and why it's had such unbelievable staying power over thousands of years. And if you'd like to take this journey for yourself, why don't you go visit Blair Housley in the golden city of Dahlonega for an experience unlike any other.
Well, we're always open. We're open, through the week, Wednesday through Sunday. So if you're wanting to come up, even when we're here working, if we're not open, come on in. We'll give you a glass of something to celebrate you coming up here. So we're always very welcoming and just love everybody that comes in here.
For more stories like this one, you can watch A Fork in the Road on GPB TV or anytime on the GPB.org website. That's where you'll be able to listen to and subscribe to this podcast or download it on your favorite podcast platform. I'm David Zelsky. Thanks for listening to A Fork in the Road.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.